here's what Connecticut is saying about Lisa Wexler.
You are a breath of fresh air. I can't wait to hear you again.
Back to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. There was some talk this morning about extending Governor Lamont's executive powers past February, which in a committee vote of 6-4, he was authorized to do. One of the people speaking up and saying, hold on, wait a second, it's not what it was a year ago, and we got to figure out whether and to what extent the legislature needs to play a part in this, is State Representative Vincent Candelora of the 86th General Assembly District, representing Durham, Guilford, North Brantford, and Wallingford. He's a Republican leader of the Assembly, and we welcome him back to the show. Good morning, Representative Candelora. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about what you're thinking about in the way in which there are two strands, there are two separate statutes under which Governor Lamont expanded or created and then expanded this taking of power on COVID-19. Can you explain what you're thinking about these civil preparedness emergency powers?
Sure. There's two statutes. One is the public health statutes, which, you know, provide for the ability for the governor to provide executive orders in times of public health emergencies. And then we have the civil preparedness statute, which is really an extraordinary statute where the governor is able to usurp the power of the legislature and effectively make laws, modify laws, and repeal laws. And it's my belief that those statutes were put in place back in sort of the Cold War era, when it was contemplated that there could be some sort of natural disaster, like a nuclear strike, where the legislature would be physically unable to meet. And those powers were invoked back in March. You know, understandably, there was concern that the legislature could not meet, and therefore the governor should have that authority. But what we've seen now is, you know, we've sort of got our sea legs back, and the legislature has the ability to meet virtually and to begin their process again. And because of that, I am just concerned that we are continuing to have the executive branch usurp the power of the legislative branch. It truly is extraordinary, and I think we need to take a pause, and the legislature should be reasserting itself back into the process.
What specific powers under that statute did Governor Lamont do that you would want to see him not do now?
So I think, you know, to me, it's a little bit less of, you know, judging each decision that was made, and hindsight is 20/20.
Okay.
But I will say, you know, things that concern me are areas of, like, you know, putting a moratorium on rent payments and on evictions. You know, that is sort of artificially interfering with a commercial process. That's going to create a lot of problems for us down the road when landlords are allowed to evict people. I think there's some people that forewent paying their rent thinking that they're never going to have to pay it again, and they may find themselves homeless when that order is lifted. So those are the kind of decisions that would concern me. And then there's just minor ones. I mean, we've changed statutes to allow for, you know, notaries to do certain things virtually or, you know, through faxing or emails.
Right.
You know, at some point we need to put the integrity back into the process and at least have the conversations of what orders could become permanent with a legislative change and what ones should go away. And I think the time is beginning, as we're seeing the vaccine rollout, that we should be having that conversation.
Yeah, we're chatting with Vince Candelora. 203-333-9422 is our number if you'd like to ask a question or give a comment and talk about this. I don't know if you saw, but this did not come from Cuomo, but it came from the New York legislature. They actually convened a special session between Christmas and New Year's. Did you see this?
I did not.
Okay, listen to this. It's very, very big news. They passed one of the country's most comprehensive anti-eviction laws. It will ban landlords from evicting most tenants for at least another 60 days. They did this on the basis of some kind of study that said as many as 1.2 million New York households were currently at risk from being removed from their homes. But again, it's a New York legislature convening a special session to do this. So I think what we're talking about is not just the policy, but who gets to do the policy, right?
That's right. And I think that it is time for the legislature to reassert itself. I mean, right now, we've been allowing the governor to take on our role, our legislative role. And I think, that needs to start to come to an end.
So can you explain to us a little bit about what year of the 2-year session we're in? In other words, how that works in terms of budgeting, because it's always a 2-year session. You were just recently reelected. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a leader. Have you been officially elected the leader yet?
I think I have. And so officially my role takes place when I get sworn in on January 6th.
Okay. So then that cycle, there's a first year and a second year. What typically takes place in the first year?
So the first year is the long session. Any member can propose bills. And it's also the budget year when a biennium budget is crafted. So there will be a lot of meetings with the Appropriations Committee setting policy on what our two-year budget is going to look like. And then you'll see a lot of other smaller policies coming out that legislators may be proposing, some of which people may begin to hear about, you know, the gas tax proposal.
Yeah.
With this regional initiative is one item that's going to be a hot topic. You know, the bottle bill, whether it should be expanded to other types of plastic bottles. We've heard about the public health option, sports betting. So any of those things can come up in a long session.
Tell us a little bit about this gas tax thing. What's going on?
So, I mean, generally right now is that the governor has signed a memorandum of understanding, entering an agreement with Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Washington, D.C., where they're going to create sort of this tax on wholesalers, which is going to translate to a tax on consumers. It's like Reggie. It's a cap and trade where these wholesalers will have to purchase carbon credits in order to sell their gas. And that money then that's taken in by this organization gets distributed to the states, and the states will have to use that money for, pollution remediation.
Right.
And, you know, to me, it's a little bit of a backdoor way of trying to fund a very broken transportation system that we have. And the gas tax, the estimates have ranged anywhere from 5 cents a gallon to almost 40 cents a gallon that it's going to cost consumers.
Doesn't Connecticut already pay more money per gallon than a lot of other states? It seems like we do.
We do. I mean, our gas tax is higher than most states, although I think this past year, New Jersey might have just surpassed us, where they just implemented a gas tax increase. Which is why I'm guessing New Jersey has not signed on to this memorandum of understanding. You know, and we talk about a global or even a regional emissions policy. I think it's critical that you're looking at states like Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, these states that are west of us, where we're getting the downwind of pollution. Would seem like we want to get them on board before we start getting states like Washington or districts like Washington, D.C. involved. I'm not sure what regional approach this really does have. And to me, it smells a little bit more of just a money grab for our special transportation fund rather than a real regional policy on emission control.
We're chatting with Representative Vince Candelora, who is the minority leader of the Assembly in Connecticut, a Republican leader, and he serves Durham, Guilford, North Branford, and Wallingford, which I'm looking at that. That's an interesting district because Durham is very rural, isn't it? Isn't it more rural, for example, than Guilford?
Yeah, but it's interesting. If you look at the district makeup, it's all the rural areas. So I have North Guilford, which is an extremely rural community, even though it's geographically half of the town. Only about 20% of the population is in the northern half. So it's more of a rural district in New Haven County.
My producer, Stephanie Stender, lives up in Durham. Her family is there. Yeah, it's all these farms there, and it's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it is nice. And even in North Branford, there's a lot of open space still. So it's sort of strange. It's tucked away as a little rural atmosphere being so close to New Haven.
Representative Candelora, how strongly do you feel about local control over zoning and the fact that there are these bills? We've been talking about this a ton on our show because it's of great interest to our listeners. But there just seems to be this confluence of disparity of outcome of races of different communities associated with zoning. And there are people that argue that there is a causative factor, and there are other people who dispute that there's a causative factor. But it's making its way into a lot of conversation and some bills that are being proposed in Hartford. As the minority leader, how are you going to lead on this? How do you feel about this? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it completely misses the mark. You know, and time and again, decisions are made based on affordability. And I think part of the problem in the state of Connecticut is that the Democrats have made this state so unaffordable and really have created the gap wealth, the wealth disparity. And so if people could afford to move into different communities, they're going to. I think a state regional approach to zoning doesn't solve the problem of affordability, you know, number one. You know, number two, I think local control is so important. You know, getting back to my community of North Brantford, we supply the regional water for New Haven, Hamden, and many of the surrounding towns. Because of that, our town has been very careful with its zoning, especially around that reservoir. Mm-hmm. We have preserved a lot of green space in that area and protected that watershed. It's a resource for the whole region. Turning that over into the hands of the state may or may not take those nuances into consideration that I think our local governments have been really good at doing in each of their towns. And they sort of, there is a uniqueness of those communities that don't just protect those natural resources, but also create that New England charm that it has. And so I think when we're looking at you know, desegregating the state of Connecticut, we really need to look at the affordability of Connecticut and how do we bring down our costs, the cost of living for everybody. And I don't think this state has done a really good job of that. This is another way to deflect the biggest problem that we have in our state, and it is the excessive spending.
We're chatting with Vincent Candelora of the 86th General Assembly District. He is the Deputy Republican Leader. Well, now it says Deputy Republican Leader online, but you are the Republican Leader, right?
Yeah, I guess the Republican Leader elect.
Elect, yeah, right. You got to change that online right now. Mr. Candelora, what do you do in your private time when you're not advocating in the legislature? How do you make a living? Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so I operate two family businesses. We have a wire manufacturing business, and then I have a sports complex. It's a 60-acre indoor-outdoor
really?
Sports and recreation facility.
Where is it?
It's in North Brantford.
Very cool. Is this a business you built yourself?
It is. My father and I started it back in 1998. We opened the doors and we built it slowly. And we now have you know, five baseball fields. We have four outdoor soccer fields. And then we have a big air structure that houses four soccer fields as well. And we have been dramatically impacted by this pandemic. So the business right now is just about shuttered. And everyone's been laid off. So we're hoping to be able to reopen in the spring. But I think to that point, it's one of the good things about being a part-time citizen legislature that you bring your perspective to the Capitol. And I think that is also why it's important that the legislature begin to give its input on this pandemic, because while, you know, the executive branch is fighting the virus, we need to start having the conversations about domestic violence increases, drug overdose mm-hmm. increases,
yep.
how are kids doing with distance learning, all of those type of collateral issues that are left on the table.
Oh, yeah. Today, the news story is that it's the most violent year in Bridgeport for homicide since 2006.
That's right. I mean, and we sort of saw that wave coming, and we need to get our arms around it. And I think, you know, the only way we're going to solve it is, you know, the virus hopefully is a short-term issue. But it has created some very long-term lasting impacts for this state that I think we are going to need to address as a legislature. I am concerned. The city of New Haven, they haven't been in a school since March. So these children haven't been inside a classroom. Some of them aren't accounted for. How is their learning experience really going? And then when you take away sports, it is that much more impactful for these children, making sure that they're getting outside and getting exercise. It's been a real tough thing, I think, as a parent for me and as a legislator to watch the impact it's had on our communities.
How old are your kids?
I have a college age, and then I have two high school kids.
Yeah,
and so it's
lot.
I think every age has been impacted. And, you know, the six-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, they don't get those years of development back. And so I think we need to start focusing on some minimum standards to make sure that these children are protected and they're getting the educational and physical development to make them succeed 20 years from now.
I think we're going to be we are not having the conversation that we ought to be having about summer of 2021.
Agreed.
About creating, you know, some kind of a society in which we support families that need to keep their kids in school. I think we're going to have to be talking about a 13th year for a lot of kids before they could be college ready. Or a redo. I know a lot
Agreed.
Of people. A lot of people have called this show, Mr. Candelora, and said their kids are just being passed. Right? They're just being passed. Yesterday, and this was in Westport. In Westport, which is considered one of our better school districts, public school districts, a friend of mine said that her son had not had either an English or history assignment to do a paper the entire semester. And the reason it was important is because he needed a paper to show to apply to another program.
Right.
He couldn't come up with an English or social studies paper. There hadn't been one assignment since September. What does that tell you?
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to that. I'm going through that process with my own son, looking at a post-grad year, because I think, you know, these children have lost a year. I went through that same process. Yeah.
They have. They've lost a year. And we have to acknowledge it. We're going to have to subsidize it. We're going to have to tell kids that otherwise might have done strictly recreational in the summer. This summer is a summer out of the ordinary. Yes,
right.
Recreational, but also academic. And we have to support that. We have to.
Especially even the college experience. You know, my first son, who's at Dartmouth, he was able to visit schools, do an overnight, appreciate the experience before he chose where he was going to go. My second son, we can't even go inside a building. So, you know,
it's
like
crazy.
A drive-by tour with your radio on. And so it's very difficult for these kids to make a decision that's going to affect the rest of their lives. And and that's where there's going to be a disparity, because if people can afford the choice of doing an extra year of school, they may choose to do that, whereas people that don't have that financial option, you know, these children might get left behind, and we can't let that happen. And I do think our public education system, we're going to have to take a look at, you know, what children, you know, need to repeat a year if they so choose.
Absolutely, without any kind of stigma, call it a COVID year.
That's right.
I just saw today that of the $4 billion that we know is being appropriated to Connecticut, and there probably will be more, $750 million is going to education. Well, what does that mean? And
that's
I
right.
think that we have to follow that money, Mr. Candelora. Who gets to decide where it goes? That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Our state ECS funding, our education funding, is $2 billion a year, to put that in perspective. So $750 million is a lot of money, and I think we do need to look at programs they're going to prop these children up and not just, you know, distribute it to districts and not know where that money goes.
Push them along. Right. And just push it along and push it along. I mean, that's an opportunity. If we're being given that money, it should be an opportunity for us to do something very constructive with it. And somebody needs to be paying a lot of attention to it. And we've just lost Mr. Cardona. I wish him well. It's good for Connecticut that he's up there in Washington. But we now have a big vacancy.
Yeah.
Representative Vince Candelora, thanks so much for coming on the show. You're welcome anytime. Good luck in this next session. Happy New Year to you. Merry Christmas to your family.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate it. Pleasure to be
on. Thank you so much. We'll be back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.